It was produced by Askia Muhammad, engineering by David Kelly. I'm Askia Muhammad. The Raucous Caucus starts now. Thank you for listening.
WPFW Washington.
Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Terry D. Kester, and it's a pleasure to be here again with Aaron. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Aaron's just a guest.
He's just a guest.
Yes, right. And with...
Well, actually, it's just not a pleasure being here with Mark, Mark and I.
Well, the there is
pleasure.
That. Yeah,
he's used to that.
That's the point. Yeah, okay. But my co-hosts on this show, of course, are...
Garland Nixon.
And
Mark Levine.
And it's a pleasure to see you gentlemen again. I am, of course, Terry D. Kester, once more, the doctor of sagacity, the professor of knowledge. Oh, never mind. I won't go any further.
A whole host of self-proclaimed titles. Right. You think it was his diamond jubilee today?
Earl of Tewksbury.
Hey. Maybe it's the double jubilee.
Yeah, didn't you see my barge on the river? Yeah, it was sinking.
No
rapidly.
Flotilla right, for you.
Right. It's an inner tube.
Twice removed to the king of slumming.
Yeah, hey, we're going to talk about the destruction of education in America here, which is happening at a nice rapid pace, and there's all kinds of good reasons that people think they're... No, there's a lot of reasons that people think they're happening. Not good. Reasons. It's a whole lot of bull, primarily spread by politicians, but our culture is no doubt defeating American education. But before we do that, just a few quick words to all get on our knees and pray for Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And for the United States.
And for the world.
And for the world, yeah. I mean, I guess it doesn't look too good there. We won't know for a couple of hours the results. But
well,
Mark,
at
you
least
were,
money didn't have any effect whatsoever.
Yeah, Mark was just mentioning it was just a few dollars difference.
Well, apparently the Republican, the last I saw in the Washington Post, and apparently it's gone up since then. Walker officially had $27.5 million that was undisclosed. That's the number of the people that wouldn't say where the money's coming from.
That's the best kind.
But Barrett had $1.1 million. So that's only 25 to 1.
Right. Yeah,
so only 96% of the money was going to Barrett, to Walker.
To Walker.
And the poor beleaguered supporter of the unions got his 4%. So,
I have a question here, though. Usually it's prostitutes that don't have to disclose how much money they're making. But I mean,
It's the same in the state. Prostitutes.
Oh, okay.
Although prostitutes, let's face it, have a lot higher morality.
Well, they have a higher morality and they're a lot more interesting people. But anyway.
And frankly, they screw you for a lot cheaper.
Ooh. Are we allowed to say that on the air?
I believe we are. I think that's a word that's legal on the air.
I think it is. Okay. Yeah, so pray for poor Wisconsin. I mean, and not that money ever, influences an election in this country or anything like that.
We can win,
one man, one vote, right? That's how it works, and everybody's vote is equal, right?
$1 million, one vote. I think it's
right. It's
so
disgusting.
We talked about it, guys. How is Citizens United going to affect our democracy?
Here
because
it comes.
Is a democracy.
How do you spell over?
Yeah.
How do you spell elephant trampoline?
Elephant trampoline.
That's what we are. We're the trampoline underneath the elephant. I'm mixing all kinds of metaphors.
Yeah. Garland's in charge of metaphors here.
And actually metal floors as well.
Right. So we'll pray for Wisconsin. In the meantime, I really am concerned about the educational system in this country because it's going down the tubes, and it's not going down the tubes because of bad teachers. So every politician is saying that should be, well,
it's
strung up.
Union,
should be sent to the principal.
Sent to the principal or put in the corner with the dunce cap. Yeah, remember when they actually had dunce caps?
I mean, most of us were schooled in the 20th century.
You're missing a high point in education. I want to assure you. Anyway, guys, I mean, I'm set for a lot of reasons. One, I did a little bit of teaching in Alexandria this last couple of weeks. And
really?
Yep. And I was also in Manhattan visiting a friend who's going to NYU Tisch School of the Arts, a young student who's going to be a director and probably be a very good director. And he's going to, do the premier theater arts school in the United States. There's no question about it. NYU, Carnegie Tech, a few other ones that are really, really top drawer. And he's a junior now. And he estimates that when he graduates, one more year, he will be $150,000 in debt.
Nice.
$150,000 in debt going into one profession that has probably the most insecure income in the world, which is theater. Mm-hmm.
Maybe he should not have gone to college to be an actor.
Well, he's going to be a director.
Do you have to go to college to be a director?
Yes, you do. I happen to know that I was the very first student from Penn State to get a directorial master's of fine arts
degree. I thought you were just the very first student in Penn State.
I was.
Founded in 1783.
I was a professor, a student.
That's what I thought.
I stuck around a few years and got a couple of degrees. It is required. If nothing else, it creates the network that you really need, the community that you need to be part of, and what school you go to matters. And this guy is, he's working while he's going to school. He's working jobs. He's working during the summer,
Unfortunately, if he's flipping pizzas, that'll be the same job that he's working after he gets his degree.
Yes, there's a lot of truth
going
in
these days.
So, one of the things that I want to talk about a little bit about is this whole student loan nonsense. Okay, the other thing I really want to talk about, because this really affects our culture is just so screwed, in my opinion, by bean counters. I mean, it really began with the escalation of bean counters. They have taken over.
Are you blaming Mexicans? What are you doing? Accountants.
Counting
beans.
It's deeper than that because, we no longer really value education. We don't value learning. What we value in this country is, quote, success.
Money.
Exactly money. Right. And success means only one thing, and that's money.
Yep.
That is actually the antithesis of education. I mean, education is not about making money. It may happen, it may not happen, but that's not the point. The point is to become a better human being, to become a better citizen,
really,
et
because when I saw graduation at Harvard Business School, they were waving $100 bills above their head. Now, that was to show their educational prowess.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
I think so, I guess. In your terms.
I'm trying to understand. The other thing that, is the same thing, part of this bean counter thing, is everything's been reduced to measuring and metrics and, counting. And, of course, I love it in Virginia, the standards of learning. Now, the SOLs, which I know the expression from, did not mean standards of learning.
The O and the L were out of luck. I don't think we can say the S on the air.
That's a very appropriate acronym for people who graduate from college. Instead of an MBA, you get an
SOL.
And I want to know what uneducated bean counter in Virginia came up with that term.
There you go.
But anyway, that whole system.
So what beans are they counting? Explain this to me.
Well, everything is reduced to measurements. Instead of measuring your knowledge or your growth, they're measuring, of course, standardizing tests, of course, eliminates, for the most part, the relationship between the teacher and the student in terms of what the teacher might be inspiring the student to do.
You could learn that on a computer. You wouldn't need a teacher.
No, you wouldn't. And, when you get down to the last few weeks of preparation, for the SOLs, it's just nothing but rote learning and rote learning just churning over and over and over and over again. Anybody could do it.
I think it's one reason why people are bad writers, because you can't teach writing in terms of filling in ovals. It requires a little bit more effort than that.
The other part is that type of thinking towards that brand of thinking that produces those test-oriented teaching is the same mentality that says, well, when we got to cut money, let's cut music classes, let's cut gym
classes, that's another big part of it.
Arts, let's cut, you know. So it's a kind of a robotic mindset that says everything has to be by the numbers. Well, music and arts and things.
I still think writing is important, though. I mean, music
and arts. That's what I spell check for.
Well, I know people that do that. Yeah. I know kids today that they're like, well, you know, I don't need to learn spelling because that's what spell check is for.
And the other thing, you know, we've talked about it in general. I mean, there's all kinds of aspects to it, too. But just as valuing labor to begin with. I mean, most schools now do not offer a lot of mechanical classes.
Oh, they used to call them VOTEC.
Vocational schools.
Vocational schools, yeah. I mean, yeah. I just happened to be acquainted with a gentleman who just passed away who was a shop teacher in Fairfax.
That's right. That's what they used to call it. Shop. Yeah. When I was in school, they called
it
shop.
But he taught primarily metalworking and things like that. I mean, he was dying in this hospital. He literally had students from like 10, 15 years ago coming to see him. Mm. He primarily had students who, quote, were troubled students. Mm. And he was one of these guys that just...
He taught them a trade. He taught them dignity.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, that whole concept of valuing labor, I mean, nobody today thinks that their custodian is as worthy as they are if they're a doctor or an office manager or what. They just don't think in those terms anymore.
Yep.
And the reality is, at least in my opinion, I don't care what the job is, what the work is. If somebody is doing it with, you know, some degree of competence and enthusiasm or just caring, that is at least as valuable as any other profession in the world.
Go ahead.
That's one of the things that got us in this whole mess, you know, and that was banks and the powers that be taking advantage of people seeing life that way, seeing the value of themselves based on what they had. So they could tell a person, hey, you can get this house worth $800,000 and you don't have to pay X amount, blah, 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 blah. And the person looked at it and they thought, well, you know, in our culture, not that way, but you know, if I got that big house, then I'm somebody.
Yeah.
Then people will look. So their thought process, they were very easy to be manipulated because people were already being taught in our culture. If you got the bigger house and you got all of these things that you certainly can't afford, but you look like you can afford them.
That's what counts.
That's what took us down.
It's what I've called in the past and on this show money morality.
Yeah.
It's this idea that if you have more money, you are better than someone without more money. I mean, there are even churches that are going and throwing out the New Testament and replacing it with what they call prosperity theology, which is money morality.
Same
words, where instead of Jesus, the meek shall inherit the earth, or it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man enter heaven, the guy threw the money chairs out of the temple. I can go on and on and on, caring about the widow and the orphans in the Old Testament too, the Jubilee year. I've talked about all these things that are actually in our religious traditions. Now it's this idea that if you're not rich, God doesn't favor you,
which is exactly the opposite.
And then these people call themselves Christians. You know
Calvinism.
What? Call yourself whatever you want.
It's worse than Calvinism.
But it's not Christian. It's not Jewish. It's not Muslim. It doesn't fit with any of the religious traditions. It's just greed. So at least say, yes, I'm from the church of greed, at least, but people don't want to face.
You know that guy. You know that guy who founded. I can't remember his name now, and I don't even want to remember his name. But he was a big shot. He founded the Crystal Cathedral in Los Angeles, I believe it is, which is this huge, incredible. It's a very beautiful.
One of those mega churches.
One of those huge mega churches. Big TV evangelist and everything else. And you know, beautiful church. I mean, there's no question about it, just because it really is all glass and everything else.
I'm sure it's very successful. Very pretty.
And I was doing. I'm just going to name names here because, you know, I'm past the point. Who cares? I was producer. You know,
They sue you for defamation. You don't have anything anyway.
Right? Yeah. Darn right, I don't. Sue me. You know. But I was producing for the Horatio Alger Awards, which is this big, huge event that happens with Horatio Alger Association, and they do some good things because they give scholarships to about 200 kids over the years.
By the way, there are still people who do not know who Horatio Alger was. They don't even know what Horatio Alger's story is. Rags to riches. This is an old American concept that, let's face it, if you're under a certain age, you may not have heard of. So why don't you just quickly explain that?
Well, I just quickly have. It's just a rags to riches story. It's starting
the American dream. You know, start off as the janitor and end up the CEO.
And somehow, you know, you found your bootstraps. You know, they hadn't been cut off at your ankles with your boots.
And you picked your bootstraps up.
That's when you had boots.
You know, and you made yourself a billionaire overnight, and that's what happens in America.
Right.
But anyway, so I'm doing Horatio Alger Awards, and this is a big, huge event. It's got all these top money people in it. I mean, I literally stood next to in a urinal with Ted Turner.
TMI.
Disgusting zero population. I mean, you know, but anyway.
While at the urinal?
Yes. He brought it up. I didn't bring it up. What can I tell you?
I don't even want to picture that image.
I don't either. But it was a good conversation. Anyway, it's got all these super, super rich people. This is the event that where I first learned you can rent the Supreme Court, because that's where we held the initiation ceremony, right?
Nice.
So now you can just buy them.
Now you can just buy it. Yeah, what the heck was rent?
It used to be rent to own.
Yeah,
but now they're already owned.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, we're doing this big event. We're going to honor 200 kids. We're going to give 200 kids scholarship. The kids are fantastic. There's no question about it. The kids are amazing. They are wonderful. They're kids from all over the country, all ethnic groups, you know, all most of them are not – a pretty bad economic situation.
Okay, right.
And they've just worked their butt off and they're doing a great job. And they get these scholarships. And the scholarships are wonderful. The association is wonderful. I'm not going to knock the Horatio Alger Award. So anyway, we got the head of the Crystal Cathedral. He's one of our MCs, right? And we're going to do this joint reading of the Desiderata, if I remember that correct. I'm mispronouncing it.
Desiderata.
But anyway, it's
walk. Peacefully.
It concludes with no doubt the universe. No doubt the universe is unfolding as it should, and it's about equality, and it's about, you know, recognizing equality and recognizing a peaceful world. It's very idealistic. Anyway, we're going to do this simultaneous reading between this one young student and the head of the Crystal Cathedral. This wonderful Christian, since you brought up this wonderful Christians, Mark. And they're going to share microphones, two separate podiums, and they're going to alternate reading this rather beautiful poem with music, et cetera, set to it and all that. Big event, you know, nice television, video, film, everything else we got going there.
Yeah.
We get to rehearsal. This kid is brilliant.
Placidly amid the noise and haste. That's the part. That's how it begins.
This kid is brilliant. He's just brilliant. And really eager. He's so eager, he calls up his parents, who have no money, of course, and say, guess what I'm going to be doing for the whole Horatio Alger Awards? And they fly out here immediately to come out and see the kids, right? Mm-hmm. We go through the rehearsal, and the guy from the Crystal Cathedral, the leader of the Christian, comes up to me and says, I'm not going to perform with any kid. It's my time on the stage.
No way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
he just refuses at the last minute to do that?
Yeah.
So the kid thinks he's going to be called up, and
disses the kid.
You know, and I have to claim I have to claim a little bit of integrity here, because it pissed me off so much. You know, and he said, you know, you've got to go and explain to him and explain to the family. He said, I'm not going to tell him that.
Yeah, you tell him that yourself.
I refuse to tell him.
Right.
You know, and the president of the organization came and said, Terry, you got to go tell the kid he's not doing it. I said, I'm not going to tell him. You want to go tell him? You want to
tell him?
You do it. I am not going to do that to that kid. So we did succeed in keeping that kid up there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I never worked for the Horatio Alger Association again.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, here's this top, you know, guy. I mean, you were talking about it in money morality.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, this famous guy with billions of dollars in his back pocket, and he's not willing to share the stage for 2 minutes.
Well, look where we are now. I mean,
that's kind of off topic, but it just brought. But, you know,
no,
sorry.
It's
you
not
know.
Really.
Not really.
Yeah. And the whole thing is this whole. The campaign is just surreal to me. It's amazing to me that with all that's happening with all the inequality, that we can look at someone who's worth $250 million,
yes,
whose platform is to cut taxes for people who have $250
that's right.
million.
That's right.
And people who
and to raise taxes on those that have less. Eric Kenner just admitted very nicely recently.
And
he said, we have to raise taxes on the poor people.
Right. Yeah. And we have people in this country that look at that and say, you know, that's a good idea.
Oh, yeah, because I want to be in the top 0.01% one day.
Yeah.
Because we all 100% of us want to be in the top 0.01%,
an economist on TV this morning who said that now it's official, industrialized country, the United States is the one where it is the most difficult to go from
to achieve the American dream. And out of the top 31,
the
we were the most unequal, 29th for equality.
Yeah.
So the American dream used to exist. Horatio Alger stories used to happen.
Yeah.
It's gone now, and thank you, Scott Walker.
And
thank
they,
you, Destruction of Unions.
Right. Didn't they vote down the pay Equal Pay Act or something today?
Did they do that today?
For women to get equal pay?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that was kind of a flimsy act.
It's not a flimsy act.
But I want to get back to, you know, the education thing. Because the other thing I didn't mention is, one, trying to turn education into a business.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was just checking out.
Yeah, it was defeated.
52-47. They, of course, passed, but under the crazy Senate rules.
What's 52 votes? That's not a majority.
The minority gets to determine everything.
Yeah, how does the bean counters work that on a majority? is not?
Well, it's not in the Constitution, no. But I'll tell you this. It has ensured that the United States government can do nothing forevermore, right. Which, of course, is the Republicans' goal.
It's the goal.
Right. The Republicans but claim to
back to education, because this all connects to education. The other factor is trying to turn all education into a business. I mean, no matter how you do it, I mean, like state funding in Virginia for the universities has been decreasing and decreasing and decreasing mm-hmm. for the state universities, mm-hmm. right? It's down to like, I think like around 17% or something like that. It's extraordinary how much it has decreased, which means, of course, you have to have more private money, more yep. endowments, more corporations, yep. more naming rights, yep. so that you can have, you know, right in your college, like at my alma mater, William and Mary, they have Budweiser Hall.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I
right.
love
college students dying of right. alcohol yeah. intoxication, right. you know, on a weekend, yeah. and, you know, they come to Budweiser Hall.
And as any college graduate knows, you know, you're inundated, but they're constantly asking for more money, which again appeals to the elite because they have these wonderful parties and everything else, and they give lots of money and they get their names on the plaques and all that. So we're creating more economic separation as we try to turn schools into business instead of to education. And the other thing that just really struck me, because particularly when I've been teaching a little bit in Alexandria, is segregation. And we are segregating ourselves in so many
oh, absolutely.
Ways mm-hmm. these days. And it is so destructive to a democracy. I am older than you guys. When I grew up in my neighborhood, one side of me lived, you know, a doctor. One side of the house, you know, was a guy, was the ex-mayor of the city, retired, had no money whatsoever.
Right.
Across the way, you know, was a guy that worked in HVAC systems. You know, my father was a chemist. You know, at every constant economic level in one little block there.
Yep.
You know, today.
I actually think that's unusual even in your day. I don't
know. No, it was not unusual. I mean every
just,
neighborhood.
Just your neighborhood.
No, my neighbor, you know, my.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a suburb of St. Louis.
Okay.
And then Chicago before that. And my cousins, you know, and my aunts and uncles, same situation. They lived in neighborhoods with mixed economic mm-hmm. levels and social levels. Not today.
Definitely
I mean,
not
it's
today.
Gated community. You right. go down. You go down to Hilton Head. It's plantations. I love that down in Hilton Head.
Yeah, right.
They don't even hide the idea. They got plantations.
And God forbid if your dad lives in a gated community and you can't find your way home late at night after getting Skittles.
Yeah,
but
I'm
just talking generically.
Yeah, generic. Right. But I mean, there really is this economic separation. There's social separation, and you get into the schools, and it's more and more and more again. Because I'm sorry, guys. I know you may disagree with me. I'm against charter schools because it's mm-hmm. undermining the educational process, and it is creating more and more segregation.
I can understand. I mean, charter schools, you know, you look at it and you say there's some good there because of what they get, but you're right. It is money that's being divided up. The other thing yeah. is that what's happening now more and more is the haves send their kids to the private schools.
Oh, sure. Yes, of course.
And they're getting government money in many
yes.
instances to the private schools.
Right.
And then what they
do is they complain about their property taxes. Their property taxes go down, so the teachers in the public schools are not well paid, so you don't get good teachers in the public schools,
right.
so the kids don't get educated in the public schools, so then more of the rich take their kids out and go to the private
Never
schools.
Never blame it on the teachers.
Well, I'll say
I won't
this,
let
Mark.
You do that.
No, my point is, I'm not. What I'm saying is if you don't pay teachers enough, you can't get quality teachers. So you say I'm blaming the teachers. What I'm saying is quality people are less likely to choose a profession
and it'd be
when
so
they're not
simple.
Paid enough.
It would be so simple to solve this problem if states would collect money from taxes, which I'm sorry, this is what taxes are for, people. This is why we have taxes, to support education across the state. And basically, every county should get the same amount of money per pupil.
Oh my God! You know, no way. Beverly Hills gets the same money as Watts.
Even
Watts gets the same money as Beverly
even
Hills.
Even Montgomery. No,
I like it the other way
Prince
around
William
better.
County, yeah. Prince William County, et cetera. They should get as much money as you know. What is it? Chevy Chase and
Montgomery.
I mean, they really should.
Yeah.
And that would solve so much of the economic disparity that exists.
No, then the Republicans would insist there be no more public education.
Well, see, here's the other thing that's happened, Terry, and that is our politicians have stuck their hands in to the educational, into the educational system. And there was a time when, you know, and I'm not going to say that our teachers aren't good teachers or bad teachers. Our teachers have, they tried to turn them into robots. So now, instead of saying, you know, Mark,
go forth, here's your lesson plan, go forth and teach your students. They say, here are the 300 questions that your test, on the test that your students are going to have to take.
Yeah, suppress your imagination, suppress your creativity.
Yep, teach the children so that they can answer these 300 questions. And if enough of them don't answer the questions, Mark, guess what's going to happen? We're going to cut money from your school.
That's right.
Yeah, that'll solve the problem. Yeah.
That's right.
That'll really help.
Well, I mean, when you think about what No Child Left Behind did, and of course, what's horrible is that that is a wonderful slogan. It comes from the Children's Defense Fund. It comes from Marion Wright Edelman. And I always felt she should sue for copyright violation.
Yes, she should.
If she could have, she could have. But what Bush's education bill did is it said very simply that if you have two schools and the rich school in the rich suburb is doing really well, that has tons of money and lots of students who speak English and so forth, and it's doing better than the school where, guess what, both parents have to work for a living and the kid doesn't have Stanley Kaplan courses
and
English is a second language.
Right.
Well, obviously the Beverly Hills school is better than the South Central LA school because the kids are doing better, not because of the poverty of the parents. So now we're going to take money from the poor schools and give it to the rich schools.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so
it's
every single
Republican
program always ends up being reverse Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Whether it's health care or education or taxes, it's always rob from the poor and middle class and give to the wealthy. That's their only thing they do.
That's what they believe in.
That's the only thing they do in every single one of their programs.
But
from the environment to education, always ends up like that.
It gets back to what Terry's saying, because the issue is this. It couldn't happen if it weren't for our culture.
That's right.
It couldn't happen.
The money and morality in our culture.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that, they wouldn't be able to convince poor people, working class and the working poor, that it's in their best interest to give everything they got to the wealthy. Because these people have these dreams of being wealthy. They're being lied to. They're being told that one day they'll be wealthy. When they won't.
That's true.
And
the vast majority will not.
These fools think they're feathering their nest for when they become wealthy.
Yeah,
and they're
not.
Just feathering the nest of the eagles that are already there.
That's
laughing.
Exactly right.
Pecking at them.
Good metaphors.
Right.
I want to bring up one attitude that disturbs me in the process, because I think it's part of our culture again, and I don't know how to defeat any of this, you know, to reverse any of this.
You're doing it now.
We're trying
it now, Terry.
But we got to be aware of the cultural influence on the classroom, whether it be from Republicans and money morality or whatever. But the cultural influence is as much as important, or even more important than what the teacher can or cannot do. Somehow or other, we have to use part of that cultural influence and also get rid of some, or change the rest of it, if at all. But the other cultural attitude that I see, or cultural aspect that I see, that is really frightening. And I was just doing some teaching in Alexandria in first grade, is attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And attitude is the new way of telling people how important you are. And this comes.
You're telling me 6-year-olds had attitude?
Yeah, I had not really witnessed it before. I'd seen it in third grade. I started out doing some teaching in high school. You know,
used to be teenagers had attitude.
Yeah, I know. I kept on going down lower and lower. And I finally said, I'm not going to go any below third grade.
My mother taught first grade, and one thing she liked was if the kids had no attitude.
Right.
And so that's changed.
I was shocked because I had not experienced it before in first grade until this time. And it's the way you achieve identity. Just as it is in all of our videos, all of our movies, all of our culture, every television drama, it's about attitude. Every sporting event, the athlete, it's about attitude.
So are you telling me that 6-year-olds were thinking they were better than other 6-year-olds? Is that what you saw?
What I'm seeing is they come to school reflecting that attitude worship that exists in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And because that one person gets more attention and more focus because of their exorbitant or outrageous attitude, they become the leaders.
Can you give me an example? Obviously you're not going to name names, but how does a 6-year-old express attitude? Because give me what you saw.
The worst case that I saw is I literally, when I walked into this classroom, this picture classroom. I'm not going to use it. Yes, in Alexandria Schools. And, good teacher and all that. And I was taken over for a teacher that was there, and I had another, full-time teacher there with me, so I just wasn't, by myself. And when I walked into, there was only one kid in the classroom. And I'm going, what the heck's going on here? And the classroom is a shambles. It's a mess. This one kid had a temper tantrum.
Everyone had to leave?
Everyone had to leave, which gives them free time. And he
literally, why'd you send the one kid to the principal?
You would think. And he trashed the whole classroom.
That's shocking. Particularly when he's six. How you think how much damage can a 6-year-old do?
Yeah.
Apparently a lot.
Apparently a lot, yeah. And, I mean, you know, he was there and he was having to clean up, and but he didn't care if he cleaned up or not. You know, he doesn't care because when you have that attitude, you achieve rank.
How does that happen? I'm going to read the lyrics to a song.
Uh-oh.
You ready?
Go for it.
Very popular song. It's a little old.
Uh-oh.
I want to be a billionaire so freaking bad, buy all of the things I never had. I want to be on the cover of Forbes magazine, smiling next to Oprah and the Queen. Oh, every time I close my eyes, I see my name in shining lights. Yeah, different city every night. Oh, I swear the world better prepare for when I'm a billionaire. Every day Christmas, give Travi a wish list. I'd probably pull an Angelina and Brad Pitt. Give away a few Mercedes, like, here, lady, have this. And last but not least, grant somebody their last wish.
Where is that? We're at break time, but where is that song from?
It's a Travi. I want to be a billionaire.
Oh,
look,
boy.
Or turn on any rap song or hip hop song, and what you hear, you're going to hear. Look at me. I got gold. I got Mercedes.
Part of our individualism and everything else, and exceptionalism. It's all part of this.
Let's give out the numbers so people could join us.
We do.
It's 202-889. What am I doing?
588.
Excuse me, I've done a different
202. 588-0893.
Excuse me.
We'll be accepting your calls. I hope that some teachers call in, you know, and I hope maybe some students call
588-0893.
Yeah, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Black music.
Black music.
Black music.
June is Black Music Month on WPFW.
In black music, like everything else in the world, class struggle is going on.
The sounds which are about to saturate your being and sensitize your soul is the continuing process of nationalist consciousness manifesting its message within the context of one of our strongest natural resources, black music.
Radical noise, black music.
The very cultural elements that make the black artist the outstanding artist and master of music that he has been.
During the month of June, Freedom of Speech, which airs from 3 p.m. until 4 p.m. each Wednesday, celebrates Black Music Month as co-produced by Katia Stitt and...
Yours truly, Luke Stewart. Our focus in black music during the month of June will be...
The Black Arts Movement, celebrating the influential Detroit-based community organization and record label Tribe Records.
Electronic dance music, an exploration of the black roots of techno and house music.
Caribbean roots music in honor of Caribbean American Heritage Month and in celebration of the 50th anniversary of Jamaica's and Trinidad and Tobago's independence.
Also, Go-Go, a look at the unique cultural identity of our nation's capital.
Again, that's Wednesdays in June on WPFW Radio, representing 100% of the 99.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus. And welcome to the classroom, the Raucous Caucus. Welcome to the caucus and thanks for being part of the caucus. I am Terry D. Kester, a frustrated former professor, teacher, etc., with my colleagues.
Mark Levine, who's frustrated for all the reasons that Terry is not.
And Garland Nixon, who's just kind of chilling out
over there. Watching these two frustrated guys freak out.
So nice to have a voice of calm amongst us. You know, I've noticed that all of us are, you know, one time or another, all of us are really peaceful and calm. And
that's true.
You
know, when we sleep.
Yeah, when we sleep. Yeah. This is the Raucous Caucus. We're discussing education. We've talked about student loans, privatization, bean counters, everything about money and metrics, standardized testing, segregation, turning it into a business, and attitude, and I already mentioned segregation. All the factors that culturally are defeating the educational process in America, I can promise you from my experience in schools, which is not vast in the elementary schools, but in other schools and college, teachers, for the most part, are wonderful, wonderful human beings. And any politician that stands up and screams about teachers not doing a good enough job should be slapped silly and put in a corner with a dunce cap. I mean, the teachers are wonderful. The principals are wonderful. They're working their tail off. Any given classroom, particularly in this area, they're dealing with 15, 16, 17, 20 or more different cultures in one classroom that they have to deal with and cope with. They're dealing with family problems, social problems. The problem is we expect teachers to solve all of this, and they can't do it. They can teach if they're lucky, you know. Yes, go ahead, Darwin.
I was
going to
say, we talked about culture, and you know, we went over this song a few minutes ago about I Want to Be a Billionaire, and it's before we go to the calls, I'll say this. What's interesting is if you study sociology, if you study people worldwide, you find that music reflects the culture everywhere.
Yes.
Listen to music in any part of the world.
At any time, any era.
And you can find out about the culture, what people are thinking, what they're feeling, what's important to them. I want to be a billionaire so freaking bad. That's what's important to the kids right now.
And one little tiny example, and we'll get to our calls, you know, which is so amazing to me. During the Depression and during World War II, which is, you know, obviously one of some of the most frightening times the country has ever faced, so much of the music is about hope and love and romanticism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Happy days are here again.
Yeah, or just, you know, whatever the shows happen to be, but it was about progression in a positive way. I mean, it was anyway.
But blues, man, you had to go through hard times to write some blues.
You know,
blues
but somebody
music.
Pointed out, you know, about the blues, which is only about the blues is celebrating, enduring.
It really is.
While it's about poverty and it's about pain,
I'm still here.
Exactly right. Let's get to some of our callers. Marvin, you're welcome to the Raucous Caucus. You going to school?
Hi, Marvin.
Hello?
Yes, you're right.
Tony Martin, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, I'm listening to the program for the last 10 minutes, and I thought I'd just call and give my, my two cents in. And let me ask you something, because I hear on your program a lot where you criticize the Republicans for a whole lot. Okay? And believe me, they are worth criticizing in many different ways. Okay, for the economy, for the back of the wars, you name it, educational system stumbling. But on the other side, I don't hear enough criticism on the Democrat Party side.
Marvin, you haven't been listening to the Raucous Caucus long enough.
No, I listen every week, man.
Oh, man, you're a good person.
Republican this, Republican that, but... I mean, are the Democrats responsible for these wars, funding by big corporations?
Hey, if you listen to this part of the Raucous Caucus, to me, I'm always criticizing the Democrats. You know,
yeah, more so than Garland.
Yeah,
that's true.
Garland and Mark still believe that there's hope for the Democrats.
Yes,
I'm hoping there's hope. But, you know, I'm in total agreement with you. You know, the Democrats are as guilty as most of this. But still, when it comes down to a vote, you got to admit they usually do a little bit better than the Republicans.
Usually. And here's my other thought. They got enough people and enough money, you know, now, you know.
They can buy any politician they want.
Well, I'm saying the Republicans got enough people pumping up what they want and down in the Democrats and enough money thrown at the Democrats. You know, I'm not going to carry water for the right wing to go after the Democrats. Yeah. They got their own people.
The Democratic Party is doing, and listen, we have talked about that. You know, I hosted an Obama intervention a year ago. The way to do it is go in primary races and fix the Democratic Party. But at least you could. There's something that's fixable and something that's not.
At least the Democratic Party. And I'm not a big defender of the Democratic Party.
That's for sure.
But at least they pretend to care about some of these issues. And what I'm saying is, even in pretending, that sort of like acting as if. And to some degree, because they pretend to care about these issues, they do, in fact, support some of these issues.
Unions!
Yeah, you know, like
to
unions.
To some extent.
Yeah, to some extent,
example.
Yeah. All right, Marvin, I understand your call and appreciate your call.
Thank you, Marvin.
Thank you much. And no, the educational destruction of America is not due to just Republicans, but it's a good damn part.
We have a guest, our guest host from last week.
Oh no. Do we dare let him on?
I mean, he was pretty good. I think we do.
He did a great job.
I think we do. Hello, Ramey.
Hey, guys. Guess who?
Hey, Ramey. Welcome.
I'm over here in London celebrating the Diamond Jubilee of Liz II.
Oh, goodness. Don't get me started.
Are you on the flotilla?
No, I asked someone, I said, why are you guys making such a big deal out of this over here? You know what they said? With all the queens you got over there, you guys got some nerve talking. They said even New York need a borough after them.
Okay, Ramey, Ramey, we love you and we loved having you on the show, but you got to work a little harder here.
Every now and then you get a good joke, but that wasn't there.
You didn't peek on that, Ramey.
Yeah, but we love you.
But
Ramey.
we have your archive from last week,
and we love you, Ramey. You do a good job.
Yeah. Right, what's your point on education?
But hey, Ramey, let me say one thing. I'm with you. We got to go to the next caller, but I am with you. Don't get me started on that whole queen business, king and queen and royalty stuff. I'm totally against it. And I believe that it reinforces the idea that some people, simply because of who or where they were born, are better than others. Well, every time I see it, I turn the TV off and I want to scream and yell, that's a bunch of crap.
So you think we should invade England?
They invaded us, didn't they?
I think we should have a revolution.
It's our turn, you know. Maybe we should invade them.
Let's do it. Let's just dump some tea in the harbor.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, Remy, you had a last thought there. I wanted to get it in.
Yeah, his name was Robert Shuler, the guy you're talking about.
Ah. Oh, yes. Reverend Shuler. That's the guy. Very good, Remy.
He's coming after you, Terry.
Okay. He's going to take away my... never mind. Anyway, thanks so much for calling, Remy. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Tesfa, we've got just a couple of seconds here because we've got other callers waiting, but jump in here, Tesfa.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening,
Tesfa.
This idea of privatizing everything, including education, has dripped down to the third world. One presidential candidate in Ghana had his platform as keeping high schools public. They are trying to make everything an object of profit. And this is destroying education in the third world, not only here. It is getting everywhere. And you cannot measure a teacher through money.
Nope.
Or you cannot have education only through money. It needs commitment. It needs belief in common good.
It certainly does.
It needs... lots of training. For example, in the United States, they only want young people working for corporations.
Yep.
That's why they spend 40% of the educational budget on universities, and high schools and elementary schools get only 60% of the budget. And this is destroying the United States and destroying the third world.
This
is a bad idea. For example,
very bad. Let me hold it right there, Tesfa, because I know there are many examples, but you have made your point superbly as always, and we appreciate it. And you're very right. You did bring up one thing that we didn't get into, and that's universities. And I recently read a study of this. For umpteen years now in universities, the actual number of professors and our educators in the schools in most universities, all universities, has been decreasing like crazy, while the number of administrative people and business people have been increasing like crazy. I mean, it's just a simple trade. Fewer and fewer professors and teachers and those involved directly in education, more and more bean counters.
Because like politics.
And the other thing is the salaries, the money for those business administrators within the country keeps on going up and up, including bonuses, while the teachers' and professors' pays are essentially stagnant.
Because you know what? Now,
all about money.
Now, colleges and universities, because they don't get much from the government.
They're profit centers.
They spend more and more time raising
money. Oh, yes.
Let's get to Shanice.
We've got a couple new callers.
Kyle and Valerie are holding it.
Hold on. Welcome to the classroom. Welcome to the caucus, Shanice, and I hope we're pronouncing that correctly.
Oh, yes, you're pronouncing the name correctly.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you, guys. I just wanted to comment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a strong advocate and supporter of charter schools.
Okay.
I think that alternative education is a good thing. I think that that sometimes public school education can be limited. I have a set of twins, and they attend a charter school, and the charter schools address the cultural, social, as well as the academic aspects of the child and the development of the child. But I am a really strong advocate for charter schools.
Well, let me say this. Not all public schools are alike, and not all charter schools are alike. And,
exactly.
Of course, there are good public schools and bad ones.
Though, and have choice.
Here's my problem, Shanice, with charter schools. It's that the parents like yourself who care and are actively involved and have time to really focus on their children's well-being tend to be able to have better luck at getting their kids in these charter schools, whereas the kids that are often the most in need, that often need the best schools, are the ones that often don't end up in them. So you end up with almost a two-class society within public schools and charter schools. What do you think about that, Shanice?
Well, I think that, you know, you do have an option. It's open. So, you know, my kids went to public school at first, but then the option of this charter school came.
What if it were random? What, how would you feel about charter schools if kids were randomly placed and it wasn't the go-getter parents that got their kids into charter schools and just the kids randomly went to one or the other? You wouldn't like it as much because you couldn't get that edge for your child, right?
Well, I didn't like it as much with the zoning for public schools. You know, the child was so limited. The school, some of the public schools are not so good. So
that's true.
My children were very limited to a very rough public school, and they didn't excel at all. Well, but when I was given the option of the charter school, they have excelled in every area of their lives. So
I really sympathize.
I'm glad to hear that for your kids. That's wonderful.
I really sympathize with Shanice, too, because she is expressing the choice, the difficult, ridiculous choice that the American public and parents have been put in.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, I guarantee you to begin with, no matter what school you go to, there's going to be periods of time when it just doesn't work, either in this classroom or with this teacher or with this age group. I mean, I learned that in teaching college very quickly. We had 1 year of students, and I don't know why. I mean, it just didn't work. I mean, every faculty member had the same basic problems. But the point is, you're always going to have these difficulties. Mm-hmm. And if everybody has this reaction, which is they're encouraged to have, well, geez, it's not working now. I got to get my kid in a different situation, which is a natural, understandable reaction. I'm not criticizing it.
No.
And so they pull their kid out because this time it didn't work, or second grade didn't work, or whatever the problem happens to be. And you're just, unfortunately, you're caught in that position, but you're creating this segregation.
And what
you really are.
And here's the other thing
about it.
As
sad as it
is. That's why I think if there are special schools, every kid should have an equal
access.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you know what? And there's another issue. It's like the kids that are, quote, left behind in these regular schools, it's like you're throwing them away.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's like acknowledging, look, you know what? We got this other option for kids, and these kids over here, you know, they're just screwed. They're going to go to a regular school.
And I'll tell you what else happens.
Instead of saying, man, the regular screws, you know.
Let's improve all the schools.
Yeah, instead of saying, let's look at whatever the charter schools do, and we need to do something to bring our regular schools up, and then that's important, instead of maybe building another battleship or nuclear submarine, maybe we could like
that. That's kind of what we're talking about. You know. Yeah. But I mean, you know, but the point is too, I mean, what happens with charter schools, because, you know, they often are, you know, essentially they're for-profit situations, and they're getting money from the state, from the taxpayers, to support their schools. You know, they start decreasing the teacher's salary, they take away the pension funds from the teachers, they take away the health care benefits, they start decreasing the pay of the custodian staff so that they make more money on the top.
One last brief comment before we go back to
Carlos.
Yeah,
we're going to go to Kyle. Hang in there, Kyle.
To go back to our culture, it goes back to this other part of our culture, the warlike part of our culture.
Yeah.
We have to be better and meaner and have bigger guns, and we have to spend, you know, most of our budget on military. And therefore, we can't do all the things like educate people and keep them, you know, keep people healthy and food. We can't do things like that because we got to have bigger bombers and bigger tanks and two and three engines for planes that don't even need one.
I can tell you exactly how to solve the educational problem. It's real simple. Get a lot more money out of military, whatever, and start putting in every classroom part-time assistants, you know, part-time teachers, parents, or whatever, increasing it three times. Because once you give, and I've witnessed this 1,000 times and every teacher has, once you're able to give some kid, you know, some kind of personal, individual attention, amazing things happen. But when you're trying to deal with cultural problems, when you're trying to deal with discipline problems, when you're dealing with a society that is constantly condemning you, which is what we do with teachers today, it's demoralizing and it's almost impossible for a teacher to handle. If we could put more people in to help the teacher, volunteers or paid, that's a proven thing. If you can get three or four adults into a classroom, you will solve even the problems that I was talking about earlier. You really will.
But what about all those poor people in, you know, the remote countries that desperately need bombs dropped on them? How are we going to?
Well, and now we got to invade England.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Well,
yeah,
but
yeah,
if you educate them and then you bomb them, it's a waste of your education.
Yeah, and I think you know David Kelly was asking a question too, which we didn't get to, and I think I addressed it. I hope we did. Well, if not, we'll try to get back to it, David. You know, the idea of public charter schools that are truly public, and as Mark was saying that it's random choices in.
Yeah.
You know, then
well, but the thing is, it's not really random because you have to apply to the lottery, and the parents that are usually the best parents are the ones pushing their kids to get to these schools, and then the kids that are in most of need are the ones that are left behind.
Yeah,
but let's get to Kyle.
We got to get to Kyle,
but
we got
to
get David Kelly in here someday too because he went to a public charter school and he understands what we're talking about. So, you know.
He'll be the only one that understands what we're talking about because none of us have a clue.
I don't think. Kyle. Jump in here.
How's it going?
We're
Hi,
doing
Kyle.
Good.
All right. Well, first of all, I'm a first-time listener, and I'm loving the show. It's a great job.
Thank you.
Glad to hear it.
I got two quick things to say, because I don't have a lot of time. One was about the attitude thing. I honestly have a theory that involves overexposure to the Internet. And I'm a young cat. I'm 24 years old. I experienced life before the Internet and after the Internet. And frankly, I feel like kids today are able to find information on everything that they care about personally immediately. Mm-hmm. And then because of that, they get that information, and then while in school, if they already found out about the Civil War, if they cared about the Civil War. So during that time, they just space out and start almost reverting back to childlike ADD-type stuff, childlike just lack of enthusiasm, lack of interest.
That's an interesting theory.
And I think that's a big part of it.
Because
that's
exactly right.
What I'm saying, honestly, you can think about that. But the university for money thing, honestly, I went to a college that was expensive as Ivy League schools, and I didn't get an Ivy League education. That's ridiculous. I know I went to Drexel University,
which
is right next to the University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school, and I worked at a bar right next to that school, and I interacted with a lot of their students. And they all got jobs immediately after college. I'm still unemployed. I'm looking. And it's unbelievable the amount of money that my family put into this university, and I got a college degree, and I did all the stuff I was supposed to do, and it's just still not working out. And I know part of that is the economy and all that stuff, but the fact is that you're right. My college, I know because my friends got jobs within the university, some of them, and there are way more administrative positions than there are educator positions,
and,
that is a huge problem.
And you bring up a real big point, Kyle, because, you know, again, we've got this whole Bean Connor attitude, so we have Newsweek and all these magazines rating the schools, you know, every year. And this school is number one.
Top three up and coming.
Yeah, right. And so you have this, again, absurd pressure, because if you get into any college, and if you work, and if the faculty is working, you're going to get an education. If you go to Nova Community College, which I know quite well, you're going to get a really good education.
I think that a lot of people today go to...
And you don't have to go to Yale or Harvard to get a good education. That's bull.
I think a lot of people, what they do is they work to get in the best colleges, and then they coast. And then it's the degree that matters, almost not what your grades matter.
It doesn't
matter what you study in school, the associations you make. We have, you know, Harvard dropout Mark Zuckerberg, right?
Developer
of Facebook. So what you have is almost where the degree, the piece of paper, matters more than the actual education.
And that's marketing.
And that's backwards.
And that's marketing. Completely it's really what it is. It's marketing. It's nothing to do with the educational value.
You know, it goes back to like jolly old England where, you know, the feudalism, where you were born the son of such and such, so you were in the Navy, you were made a captain of the boat, even though you didn't know anything about the boat. So now, well, you came out of, well, you were the son of a wealthy person, you came out of an Ivy League school, so you get the job or you get the position or whatever. You may not be the smartest person. The smartest person might have came out of, you know, sheepskin state.
Or you have smart kids that can go they can actually get into an Ivy League school but can't afford to go.
And the truth is, and you know, if you've been in a situation, and I've been lucky enough to be in where you employ a lot of people, you know, the school they matter to does the school they attended doesn't matter a bit.
Once you get on the rubber hits the road.
It matters the person, the individual, you know, what they want to do, what they can do, what they're willing to contribute.
Do we have two Valeries on the line?
I don't know if we have two Valeries.
Let's get to Valerie number one.
Yeah, well, no, she's actually number two
on the
computer.
She's our first Valerie.
Valerie, first Valerie, we're talking to you. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hello, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
We need to take a breath, so go ahead, Valerie.
Okay, good evening. How are you all doing?
We're good.
Okay, well, my mom had a real good expression, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Almighty Dollar.
Oh, my God.
And I think that really sums up a lot of what's going on now.
It does,
unfortunately.
In terms of education in this country was never really supposed to be for everybody. If you really do your research and look at the history,
you
find out that education was really supposed to be for the upper class.
Oh, sure.
And then somebody
there were quotas.
Came along and said, well, you know, we need to educate, you know, the others to be able to be, I don't know, better or whatever. But at this point, that philosophy of, you know, not seeing the value of people, I was always taught, I don't care what job the person did, you spoke to them. You
Amen.
Know, even the people on the street who were kind of like involved in nefarious kinds of things, I was told that you speak to them because you never know who you're really speaking to.
That's right.
And what the value is. And I taught middle school.
Ah, so, you know, brave lady.
I, I understand that. I'm in the medical profession now, but at that particular time, it was like I just come out of college and all idealistic, and I said, well, let me do this for a while. And it's the most wonderful thing that you can do, I think, besides being a parent, because you actually get to shape the future.
Yes.
You get to touch
it's true.
The future. And what they have done with teachers now in schools is a sin. I'm going to say this really quickly because I know you have other people
on the
line.
Yeah, we got two other calls you want to get in. Go ahead.
I think she might have lost her signal.
Did we lose you?
I think she lost.
That's too bad.
We're sorry.
Okay. We'll go to the other Valerie, who maybe all Valeries have like a telekinesis. They have great minds.
Well,
yeah,
no
so let's
that.
Go to Valerie number
other
two.
Valerie,
maybe she can fill in. Okay. Hi, second Valerie.
Hi, this is Valerie number two.
Yes.
I love Valerie number one. She made great points.
Me too.
We liked her too.
Yeah, you guys are making an amazing show tonight. And I guess just to build on that, I think it's awesome that you made the connection between the resources that we put to the military. Because I see this whole, what's happening to education in our country, they're not necessarily failing at educating children. They are succeeding in creating a permanent underclass.
Yes,
creating
you got it.
A generation of people for whom the military is their only option.
I'll tell you something, Valerie. I lived in Europe for a year, and when I lived in the country of Switzerland, and some of the highest paid professions were teachers in Switzerland.
Should be.
And the students were well educated, and the teachers were very much respected. It was a high, not only high paying, but a high status job.
How big is their military again?
They've got a very, very small one.
They have like a citizens military. They got like a guy or something.
but that's the point. Yeah. They spent money on what they cared about. And I don't think Americans care about their kids any less than the Swiss do.
No, that's what Terry said. Our culture is causing this.
Yes, and we have to deal with that and try to shape it. We can't get rid of our culture, but we have to be aware of it and deal with that.
And we have this big military. People carry guns around because they're afraid. We do this because we live in fear. And our politicians...
Well, we're taught that.
Yes, our politicians teach us every day, be afraid.
Yep. Let's get to Aiza, because Valerie number one called back.
I want to throw in one quick thing just to bring up on Valerie number two's point, or maybe it was Valerie number one. In the very beginning, if you remember, George Washington, freed his slaves upon his death. He waited until his death, but he freed his slaves, right? He also provided for them to get an education, is what he wanted, for all the slaves to get an education, a little more progressive than most, right? Virginia immediately passed a law, you can't educate slaves.
Yeah.
Solve that problem.
They didn't want them to read because they might revolt.
Well, they might think, and everything
else.
Exactly. They were already thinking.
Works the same way today, Jerry.
Are we back to our first, we're back to
first Aiza, and then our first Valerie.
If we have time, we'll get back to Valerie Azize.
Aiza,
welcome.
Peace and blessings to the Raucous Caucus and the entire PFW family.
Thank you.
They're calling just to make a real quick point. One, I think that it's not necessarily charter schools that are the problem or necessarily public schools. The entire educational system needs a revolution of values. Anytime you are spending more on criminalizing or incarcerating a child as opposed to educating a child, then you have a problem in that society.
You better believe it.
I'm an educator.
Good for you.
I run a nonprofit organization, and we decided to try and help start a charter school because it was so difficult going the other route. Mm-hmm. But I think both sides, public schools and public charter schools, need to be supported, and all of us need to be in the streets turning cars over. Terry, you always talk about protesting.
Take to the streets! Yeah, but leave the cars alone. You'll get arrested.
Vote. Nobody hears their voice. Everybody talks about, we're for children. But they're not putting their money where their mouth is.
One of the great crimes in this country today, one of the great crimes is that when a person fills out their FAFSA and they apply for student loans, there's a little question that says, have you ever been convicted of a drug offense?
Right.
If you were arrested with
a bag of marijuana. That's right.
When you were 17, you can't get student loans. That's one of the greatest crimes of the
country. You could go to college if you're rich. Yeah. You could do drugs and go to college. If you're rich, but if you do drugs and you're poor, you can't.
Can you insert in there, but I didn't inhale? I don't think that's
on the form.
All right, okay. Are we back to Valerie?
Yeah,
welcome.
I think it's the first Valerie.
Yes, Valerie.
Who got cut
back.
Off.
Quickly.
Okay, really quickly. Yes. The movie Accepted. If you ever get a chance to watch it, and you've probably seen it already, at the very end,
one of the characters makes a speech about what education is really all about. And the idea is that education should inspire, it should make people feel as though they are not only someone, but that they have something to offer. Because then you make a society that's going to be, has equality in it no matter what you're doing. But if you're really not looking for equality, then you've got what we've got right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll just leave it at that. I know you
beautifully put, Valerie. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, thank you for getting back to us, Valerie. And she reminds me, you know, to me, as far as I'm concerned, the purpose of education is simply to appreciate life.
And education,
which includes your life and other and everybody else's life.
It's also to improve understanding. I mean, what education does...
If you appreciate life, you're going to... Yeah, I agree with you.
It helps you put yourself in someone else's shoes. It helps you be less self-centered and recognize the other needs and the other things going on this planet.
And education is not putting something into a child. It's bringing something out.
Teaching how to think is more important than teaching what to think.
And you give them something and they expand on it, and we get Thomas Edisons and we get George Washington Carvers and we get geniuses as a result
of
learning something.
Or we just get good people who care. You know,
who care about the society in which they live. And that's the other thing that segregation does is it says to the kids, hey, you're not important or you are important, and that's exactly what
I think. We only have a minute left. I'm going to squeeze in this story real quick because it's important. It's the good size of education.
Okay.
It simply is. I was teaching middle school at one time. I had a special ed. Only about 6 or 7 students. Total chaos, right? And there was like 2 or 3 young women in there, and there was a couple of young men in there, and it was just chaos. There was no way I could get control of the room. And I finally got ticked off, and I don't even know where I got the idea. And I just screamed out to this one girl. I just screamed out to her, Sandra, how the heck do you ever expect to become a doctor if you keep on acting like this? And she goes, huh? And I said, how do you expect to ever become a doctor if you keep on acting like this? She said, who told you I wanted to be a doctor?
That's right.
I said, nobody told me that, but I know you could be if you wanted to. And she said, really? And I said, yes. And the classroom settled down. Now, that wasn't my genius. That just happened. Mm-hmm. But that girl, it's like the first compliment she had gotten in her life.
But if you don't want to be a doctor, you want to be something else. And I want those choices respected.
And just the fact that somebody gave her a compliment,
Said, you can be whatever you want, not your little creed.
I mean, it was magnificent. I still get goosebumps when I think about that. We're out of time. This is the Ruckus Caucus. I am Terry DeKester with
Mark Levine
and
Garland Nixon.
And next on the air, thank heavens, brother is Brother Ava.
We will be at Ben's Next Door next week. 1211 U Street, 7 p.m. Don't miss the Ruckus.
Come down and hang out.
Come down and join us. Until then, for heaven's sake, support your teachers. Thank you.
Please do.